If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 282. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about green rice terraces, rugged karst mountains, and blue skies of the Guangxi region of southern China. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, if you're thinking of picking up women in an airport, you may think better about having the pickup line be, "Have you ever wondered if someone could get something onto the plane they weren't supposed to?" Yes, that indeed was the pickup line of one Brian Sisko, who now finds himself banned for life from Delta Airlines. And speaking of being banned, the TSA and the Texas government don't see eye to eye right now on the security procedures. And Texas may pass a law that will disallow security agents who intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly touch the anus, sexual organs, buttocks, or breasts of any person, including touching through clothing or touching the other person in a manner that would be offensive to a reasonable person. This has been a bill that has been released into the Texas legislature. And the problem with this is, from the TSA's point of view, they have no problem with Texas having this law, but they have said if they pass it, they won't allow flights to land there. So that's a story that's worth watching, especially if you live in Texas. And then in good news and straight out of the movies, a Colorado woman who didn't know how to fly a plane had to take controls of a single-engine, four-seat Cirrus prop plane after her husband had trouble breathing and lost control of the aircraft. She was talked through how to fly the plane, but fortunately her husband recovered and took back the controls after 40 minutes in time to land. For links to all of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sean Ferris, who's come to talk to us about Guangxi, China. Sean, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you very much.
And I say welcome back. You haven't been on the show for a while, but the last time you were on, you were here talking about Transylvania.
I was. That was about a year plus ago.
Oh, I visited that recently, even. I did not realize that.
Oh, well, actually, maybe longer. I lose track of time.
And I don't know that there's a tie-in between Transylvania and Guangxi, the region in China. What led you to Guangxi?
I had a business arrangement to go to Guangzhou, and my client flew back, and I said, if it's okay with you, I'll make sure you get back on the flight, but I'm going to hang here and have some fun.
And can we put it on a map for those people who, like me, are not familiar with where it is?
Yes, it's a landlocked province right in the southeast of China, south from Beijing, north from Guangzhou.
Okay. And
What's the attraction? Why should I go to that part of China?
You know, I think it's one of those areas of China that isn't trampled yet by foreigners and tourism. It doesn't have the congestion that you would find in a major metropolitan area of China. And it still has that wide open, blue sky, more rural feel to it.
And we teased this show a little bit for people who go to the website with some of the pictures of the region. And we're talking about a region that is much more rural than a lot of pictures we're seeing coming out of, say, Shanghai or Beijing.
Oh, yeah. There's no skyscrapers in the areas we're trampling around. One of the pictures I think we posted was the rice terraces, which is actually just a bunch of little villages that you hike up around the rice terraces. Beautiful country.
And then you say there's no skyscrapers, but we do have some of the picturesque rock formations that people have probably seen in pictures of China but never known where they are.
Exactly. If you look at any of those old charcoal or painting drawings of China and see the large karst mountains, that's the Guilin Yangshuo area of China.
Okay. And what kind of itinerary would you recommend for someone as they go to that region?
Well, in all my studies and in my experience over there, I think basically to fly into Guilin, which is very easily reached by any major city of China, China Air, Air China Southern, China Eastern, they all fly into Guilin very inexpensively. I think my flight from Guangzhou was $50 each way.
Mm-hmm.
Then Guilin is more of a larger city. It's probably 600,000 or 700,000 people. I immediately flew in there and I left up to the mountains to Penan, which I think would be the appropriate itinerary to do.
Okay. And you left via the mountains via public transportation. You walked there. You were driving. How did you get to the mountains area?
The best way to probably get up to the Penan area is to fly into Guilin, take the airport bus, which is a cheap bus. I think it costs $2 or $3. It's an air-conditioned bus that takes you right into downtown Guilin to the long-distance bus station. And then you take a minibus ride 2 hours up the mountain. It's only about 100 kilometers or 60 miles up the mountain, but it's a two-plus-hour drive to get up there. And it's a windy road. It's a beautiful scenic road going up there.
Now, you said there's not as many tourists, so as we're staying in places in this area, you're staying in guest houses, Western hotels, Chinese hotels.
The hotels, it's blossoming right now. Now's the time to go. In Penan, there's plenty of accommodations. The hotel that I stayed in had a double room with a private balcony overlooking the rice terraces, and I think it was $35 a night, and that came with breakfast.
Okay.
And amazingly enough, you're up in the middle of what you almost can, after that 2 hour drive, you think you're in absolute middle of nowhere, which you are removed from civilization. And yet every cafe or restaurant there has free internet that you can chat through.
Interesting. So once you've made it to the mountain region, we've got pretty scenery to look at. Are there particular places you would recommend we go, hikes that we would do, or how do we enjoy that area?
All of the above. When you take the minibus up, the Penan villages don't allow any vehicular travel beyond Penan. And
okay.
So they park in a parking lot. And what's interesting, this is kind of a beginning of your adventure in this area. I had read online that the women of the village, they earn money by taking your luggage up the hill to your guest houses. There's no major hotel. There's small guest houses. And so when the minibus pulled up, sure enough, there's this lady, she was probably in her early 60s, wanting to carry my heavy bag, which was about 40, 45 pounds at the time, up the hill to my hotel. I didn't even negotiate the price with her. She charged me $3 to haul my bag up. And I felt almost guilty. In fact, I sent a picture over to you of this lady. And basically, she's the strongest lady I think I've met. She carried that bag straight up the hill for 15 minutes straight walk to the hotel. I found out later that the hotel I was staying at was at the very top of the hill. And she gladly walked all the way to the top and then arranged to carry it down when I left Penan. As for things to do and see, the rice terraces, they have hiking trails all over the place. There are short trails that you can take in 15 or 20 minutes, and then there's longer trails that are 2 or 3 hours worth of hiking up into the mountains there.
And are they well marked? Is it something that, because you're not a native Chinese speaker?
No, I'm not.
Do you speak some Chinese?
Very little Chinese.
Okay.
But The trails were very well marked. The villagers have set up little shops. They dress themselves up in their traditional costumes with the silver. I guess you could get lost up there, but you'd probably have to try.
Okay.
But there's also, for those who may be a little bit more leery about just venturing off on your own, there's plenty of local guides that you could hire for $10 a day to take you around to all the scenic spots.
Okay. And did you hire a guide while you were there, or did you go on your own?
I just went on my own.
Okay.
And in fact, one of the other scenic things to do is the Miao. There's four or five different ethnic cultures that live up in this area, and they're all distinctly different. One of the cultures that I encountered was the Miao, M-I-A-O, village, where they call them the long-haired women, and they never cut their hair. And so they'll take pictures with you, and they'll unwind their hair, and these women are probably only 5 feet, 5 feet, 2 inches tall, and their hair stretches out to 5.5 or 6 feet long.
Okay, interesting. You know, it's funny that way. I think before I had gone to probably the last trip I was in China and Hong Kong, I didn't really have the impression there were as many subcultures in China as there are. I think most Americans could name Chinese and Tibet and...
And that would be it.
And that would be out. Yeah.
Okay. No, and that's part of that fun of this region is mm-hmm. that you're getting into these subcultures that do exist and they're thriving.
Right. Well, even in Hong Kong, I think there are four major peoples that yeah. people that particular region. So it is obviously more complicated and has a richer history than I think we sometimes yeah. have been exposed to.
In fact, my impression was the Chinese know more about the West than we know about them.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. Yeah. Interesting. What stands out? What was the best moment of your trip?
You know, I think best moments of the trip, we haven't talked about Yangshuo yet. That's where the Karst Mountains. Hiking up those mountains, doing the kayaking down the river, the bamboo river traps, raft trips, those were absolutely fun. And it was more of a smaller village or city that you could kick back in and relax. Up at the Pinan area, the rice terraces, the first morning I was there, I got up early in the morning and the clouds had wandered in and were just circulating among the rice terraces. And it was just gorgeous and serene up there.
So it sounds like we hadn't finished with your itinerary there. After you went to your first stop here, you did more here that I hadn't gotten into yet.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to out of the mountains yet of the rice terraces.
Okay.
After the rice terraces, and the rice terraces are predominantly for those who just like trekking up in the hills. Photographers would absolutely love the area, especially when early morning when the clouds start floating in around the rice terraces. Beautiful time of year to be there. I understand that a month from now, in June, is one of the best times to be up there as well, because that's when the rice terraces are all full of water, and mm-hmm. you get that natural reflection off of the water.
Interesting.
And the ride up from Guilin to Pinan to the rice terraces, I negotiated a price with the minibus driver round trip for 90 yuan, which works out to, I think, $5 each way for the two-hour each-way trip.
Right.
So it's mm-hmm. quite the bargain. Then I went down the mountain back to Guilin and then took a long-distance bus 40 minutes south of Guilin to Yangshuo. And having been in both in Guilin and Yangshuo, I would go to Yangshuo and skip Guilin. I think the scenery was more beautiful. It was more relaxed. There was definitely more outdoor activities to do down there.
Now, you would still do the rice terrace region you did, but you just wouldn't spend much time in the city.
Exactly. I would recommend, as you come down from the rice terraces, only using Guilin just as a start-off point to take the next bus down to Yangshuo.
Okay. And Yangshuo is a smaller town?
It's a smaller town. In fact, it actually feels more like a town than a city.
Okay.
You have more Karst Mountains surrounding the town.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the town kind of sits right in the middle of the Karst Mountain and the Li River.
Okay.
And one of the fun things to do there is you rent a bike, probably about 20-year-old bike. It's about 15 yuan a day to rent the bike, so about $2. If you want the more well-maintained mountain bike, you may be paying $7 or $8 a day. And that's a cheap, easy way to get around the Karst Mountains there. Lots of biking areas, and it's relatively flat, so you can go pretty much anywhere you want.
So you're not biking up the mountains, but around and in between them.
Yeah, you wouldn't bike up these mountains.
No, even walking up them looks like a challenge.
Yes. In fact, one of the mountains that I'd recommend is be Moon Hill, which is a fairly straight-up hike. It's not too strenuous. Somebody has actually made the efforts to put in 800 marble stairs to get up to the top of Moon Hill. But the views on top of Moon Hill are just incredible. Everywhere you look, there's a panoramic view of the Karst Mountain surrounding Moon Hill.
So it sounds like before I go, I'm going to be spending a lot of time on my Stairmaster getting ready for this trip.
In fact, funny story, when I arrived at the base of Moon Hill, there was two farmer ladies that were trying to sell me drinks. And I said, no, I already have a drink in my backpack. I don't need another one. She says, well, it's a big climb. And I said, I understand. You're going to be hot on top. And I said, I'll be fine. And these two ladies were just persistent, and they actually followed me up the hill, talking to me in kind of a broken English, broken Chinese conversation. And when I got about halfway up, there were some benches that you could sit down and rest on. So I sat down and rested, and I figured they'd just probably move on. Instead, they whip out these fans out of their backpacks, and they start fanning me so that I can cool down. And I looked at them, and they were just smiling and just carried on the conversation as they fanned me. And then I got back up, and they fanned me going up the hill. And so I felt very compelled to buy something from them. And so I bought a can of Coca-Cola from them, and I think they charged me $3. And then they actually followed me down the hill, fanning me as I walked to help cool me down. So I never had that VIP treatment before. And so when I got the bottom, I bought some water from them for 5 yuan, which is
less than a dollar.
Yeah, less than a dollar, 80 cents. And a Chinese lady, after I purchased the water, came over to me and she says, you understand that they only buy those for about 1 or 2 yuan in the store and sell it to you for an inflated price. And I'm like, yeah, but they followed me up the hill and banned me the entire time.
It sounds like you got your money's worth. I don't think they really.
I definitely think I got my money's worth out of that.
Funny.
In fact, if you want to be really pampered, there are ascendant chairs in Penang, and you can negotiate a price, and two men will carry you up in a chair up the side of the mountain.
I have seen that, and that just looks amazing to me because, again, these mountains look like they're almost straight up and down. So
it's quite the climb. I mean, that lady that carried my suitcase, she was one strong lady.
Interesting. And where did you go from there?
The two places that I primarily camped was Penang up in the rice terraces and then going down to Yangshuo. In fact, you could use Yangshuo as a base to do all sorts of different activities. There's numerous rock climbing opportunities there, a lot of mountain climbing shops with ropes and guides if you want to take them, or you can just rent the equipment and do it yourself. There's hiking up on the Karst Mountains, several Karst Mountains that you can hike up on top. What else is there? Kayaking, floating the river.
And you mentioned you did kayaking.
Yeah, kayaking was a lot of fun, floating on the river.
So is this whitewater or is it more of a float?
It's more of a float.
Okay.
It's more my style of kayaking. There's also markets, smaller villages near Yangshuo that you go to their market. They rotate, and you can find this online, but there's a place called like Qingping and Puli. These are neighboring villages, and they rotate their market days. And so you can go maybe for $3 or $4 by bus up to one of these villages during the market days and see the new village and shop and buy some handicrafts, whatever you'd like to do.
Are there any particular handicrafts that that region is either known for or is predominant when you're there?
No, a lot of the stuff, there's a famous street called West Street, downtown Yangshuo in the kind of the downtown area. And that sells Tibetan silver, it sells masks. There was a surprising number of Chinese tourists that were there. In fact, I think the Chinese tourists outnumbered Western tourists by 20 or 30 to 1.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chinese tourism is really growing very rapidly too, so it makes sense to go to some of the prettier parts of your own country.
Yes, and they do. They travel around. In fact, when I was up at a place called the Butterfly Cave, which is like if you've been up to Carlsbad or there's a cave up in northern Utah, Tempanogos Cave, that has, you take the tours down through the underground with all the, what do you call the things that hang from the top and the ceiling?
Stalactites.
Stalactites, exactly. They have several caves around Yangshuo if you like to tour a cave, but they do it a little bit differently there. They have everything lit up in bright colored lights. And so it's not this natural stone that you're looking at. You're looking at the natural stone lit up in greens and reds and purples. And I guess that's their way of making it a little showier.
Some caves in the U.S. do that as well, and others go for a more purist approach of only white lights or something like that, just depending on your approach.
Yeah, it's just a different way of viewing the cave. Mm-hmm. And then part of the Butterfly Cave and some of the areas right around that area have little shows that the minority ethnic groups will put on. And mm-hmm. so they'll come out and do dance routines or play their local instruments, and that's fun to watch.
Interesting.
In fact, I was at one of these performances, and there was probably 250, 300 Chinese tourists that were there watching this program, and I'm the only white man sitting up in the stands there, and I couldn't understand maybe every 20th word that he was talking about in his presentation, and then all of a sudden, all the heads are turning and looking at me, and he's, ni hao, and he waves at me and says, where are you from? And I said, Nevoa. And, oh, you're from America. Welcome. And everybody clapped for him. And everybody cheered and clapped on. And then after the program, you can go down and take pictures with these girls that are all dressed up in their traditional costumes. And what was happening is people were asking me to stand next to one of them and take pictures with them and the traditional dress lady. I'm in lots of scrapbooks now.
That's funny. You were both curiosities. So, and for those who are not familiar with the Chinese words that Sean was using here, Meguo, or the name that is used for the U.S., literally means beautiful country, which I've always thought was very nice.
I thought that was very pleasant. I don't know how we got the name, but it's very complimentary.
Right, exactly.
I would say another fun thing to do is they have several English schools around Yangshuo, and they have English corners. And you may have been familiar with some of those around the world. Where students will come out at night, usually in the evening, 6 or 7 in the evening, and at certain parks. And their purpose of being out there is to find foreigners so they can practice their English. And it was actually quite fun to run into the English corners around Yangshuo and have these students practice their English with them.
Now, did you know how to find them, or did you just run into them?
Both. I actually had one that I had found on couchsurfing.com, that there's this English quarter, this is how you get to it. When I was eating breakfast in a local Chinese restaurant, which, by the way, was a cheap breakfast at 65 cents. You got to love Chinese for the food prices there.
Mm-hmm.
When I was there, there was some students that approached me and said that they were on an English program from Nanning University, but they were there in Yangshuo for a week. And their assignment was to find 3 foreigners and get certain information from them, you know, where they were from, what they were doing, what they saw, what they liked about China. And I got caught up with some of the college students there that wanted to practice their English and complete their assignments.
I had ran into that not with Chinese, but with Spanish and English in Mexico City, where there were people at the museum. They had a series of 10 questions. And unfortunately, their English wasn't quite good enough that they could understand all the answers yet, but they could ask the questions, and sometimes you could tell that some of them weren't quite fluent enough yet to get the answer you were giving, but I've been there myself, so I understand what that's like.
Which is a fun way to meet locals.
Exactly, absolutely. What was the biggest surprise?
I guess having been to China's major metropolitan areas, I was expecting this to be much more populated than I found it to be. And that was actually a nice surprise, that it was both scenic and you really could be on the top of Moon Hill and there's only 5 people on top of the entire mountain with you.
Interesting. And you mentioned eating local food, eating the Chinese food there. What is the cuisine like there? Is it similar to the other places that you've been? You're a little further from the ocean there, so you're not getting as much seafood as you would, I imagine, like Shanghai.
Actually, a lot of river fish.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And the famous dish in Yangshuo is beer fish. And they sell it in all the major restaurants. And by major restaurants, that's a misnomer, because most of these are just little cafes.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the Chinese meals. I ate cheaply. I ate just what everybody else was eating around me. If you wanted a break and wanted to get more of a Western fare, there's plenty of little cafes serving Americanized or English breakfasts and lunches that you can grab. And pizza, I guess. There's a lot of pizza parlors kind of popping up around there.
Okay. What do you wish you had known?
To spend more time there.
Okay.
it was one of those things that I had gone south to Hong Kong and Macau before I went up to Yangshuo and Penang. And especially Penang, because it takes you 2 hours from Guilin each way to get up there. I wish I had spent and just allotted more time to be up there and to explore.
And you took a number of gorgeous pictures, some of which will be in the episode, the enhanced version of this show. Mm-hmm. Which one brings you right back there when you see it? What's the one that captured the region for you?
I think the one for Penang is the picture where the clouds are down in the lower valleys. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing on top of the rice terraces taking the picture, looking at the clouds passing through.
Okay.
That was ideal for that area. And then the view from on top of Moon Hill is another picture that just reminds me of being there out in the open on top of the mountain.
Excellent. Any warning you would give?
One of the warnings that I felt very safe in China. In fact, I felt safer in China than most metropolitan cities of the Western world. One of the concerns usually is when you're getting into Guilin, you get kind of zeroed in by the touts trying to convince you to come with their minibus or telling you that the long distance bus to wherever location
sure.
doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I think just going in armed with knowing that a round trip from Guilin to Penang, it should be in the range of 80 to 100 yuan to get back and forth round trip. And then when the tout comes up to you and says it's going to be a 200 yuan drive each way, then you know that he's just leading you astray.
Okay.
So I think armed with understanding what the local prices are, especially when you're using foreign currency, sometimes that translation or the conversion of the currency isn't foremost in your mind when you're dealing with these touts that follow you around.
Okay.
I think there's some really good resources out there, you know, TripAdvisor, Couchsurfing, where people tell you this is a great price or this is the going price for the bus rides or for the river trips. I'll give you, for instance, one of the touts quoted me 500 RMB to go from Guilin to the airport. Well, there's an airport bus for 20.
Yeah, okay.
And so just understanding what the pricing factor is and knowing that there's an air-conditioned bus that's convenient and available right outside the airport that takes you right into downtown is well worth doing some research on.
And just so people know, Sean here didn't change money types when he went from yuan to RMB. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
I've never been sure why one stood for the other, but that's okay.
I think RMB is supposed to be the official name for it.
Right.
And then yuan means dollar. And they also use the word kwai, which translates roughly into bucks.
Okay.
Which I suppose we do the same thing.
We do indeed. We do indeed. Yeah. And not even counting mula and simoleons and anything else we can think of.
Exactly.
So you went to a region that's a little more out of the way. When did you feel closest to home and when did you feel furthest from home?
Closest to home is when you're wandering down one of the main streets of Yangshuo mm-hmm. and you smell pancakes cooking in the morning for breakfast and pancakes and bacon.
Okay.
It brings you right back home. The furthest away was probably where I rode the rental bike mm-hmm. down through the Kars Mountains. And I stopped off at this no-name roadside restaurant and had a fish lunch. And that was just kind of, you knew you were in China at that time. The way that the service was given to you and the food, and it was like unlike any Chinese food I tried before.
Interesting. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Guangxi.
Having two ladies follow you up a steep mountainside, fanning you to cool you down as you go.
I think that qualifies.
For the price of $2 or $3, and they give you a drink at the top and the bottom of the hill.
Is there anything else that you would like people to know if they're going to follow in your footsteps?
I think just spending more time. I think mm-hmm. you could easily spend 5 days a week in Yangshuo without any problems and having a new activity go on every single day. Penang, if you just wanted to wander and have that scenic serenity, spend a little extra time wandering the villages and being more familiar with the native cultures up there. I was only introduced to two of the probably 5 or 6 ethnic groups that live up in that region.
Interesting. Okay.
Did I tell you, sent you the monkey picture?
Yes, you sent me a picture.
Oh, did I?
What's the story behind the monkeys, though?
Well, the monkeys were, when you go up into, it's called the Big Banyan area.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 1,300-year-old banyan tree.
Okay.
And they've kind of made it a tourist destination. And for tourism, they have trained monkeys that you can sit and take a picture with. And then 100 yards down, they have peacocks that will fan their feathers open for you, and you can take a picture with the peacock. And then you can go sit on a camel, and they have a camel there, a Mongolian camel you can sit on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They'll fan their feathers, but they won't sell you cold drinks or follow you up the mountains.
Exactly.
Okay. No, that's hardly worth it.
That's right.
Final two questions.
Yes.
Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Guangxi when what?
When you're viewing Karst Mountains rising out directly from the town that you're standing in.
Okay.
It's just scenic beauty. It's just these Karst Mountains that come out of the middle of nowhere and surround the entire town that you're in.
Okay. And we say Karst Mountains. We haven't really defined our terms here, but it's almost like dragon teeth coming up from the ground here. Fairly
exactly.
steep.
And they go up fairly steep, probably 800 to 1,000 feet straight out of the river bottom.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize this region in China in three words, what three words would you use?
More rural.
Okay.
That's two words, but we'll count it as one. Scenic and just friendly. The people around you were just very welcoming. It was a fun place to stay and inexpensive. I'll have to add a fourth word in there because once you get there, the cost of hotel, food, et cetera, you can easily enjoy every day on less than $50 a day, eat well, and stay in a nice place to live.
Excellent. Well, Sean, thanks so much for coming back on the show and sharing with us your obviously newfound love for Guangxi in China.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
In news of the community, we do have a spot for the Amateur Traveler This Week in Travel meetup in Vancouver, and that is for Friday, June 10th, starting at 1 o'clock in the afternoon for those people going up to the TBEX or Travel Blog Exchange Conference. And that is 2011 for those of you who are listening to this show somewhat later on. And check out the information at facebook.com/amateur traveler in the Facebook community for the details there. I did receive an email recently from Emina who said, just started downloading your podcasts from iTunes. Now, I just quickly wanted to thank you for the great show, great tips and links. Thank you for your efforts to make this such a great show. Have not gotten through all of yours yet, but I will try my best. But feet are already itching and would love to start tomorrow and to travel the world. But unfortunately, there's still the work which helps affording. But soon I have a trip already booked and some of your New York City tips and links already saved. Thanks again. Have a nice day and looking forward to your podcast. And Emina is writing from Zurich, Switzerland. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to leave a comment at this episode at amateurtraveler.com or send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.